Fans, it's great to have you back with us on this Sunday morning as we get ready for Game 3 between the Giants and the Pirates, as the Giants try to sweep the Pirates and get ready for the Atlanta Braves. Time to bring in the professor. Of course, he's the assistant to the director of player personnel. He's now a big TV star, and that is the professor, Ron Wotus. Well, how are you this morning?
Marty, I'm great. I don't know about a TV star, but to your point, I am doing some NBC pre and post games for NBC, and I just did my first two Friday and Saturday, and I'll do the Atlanta series coming up as well.
All right, what's it like being on TV for you? This is a new experience.
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, thankfully for me, I've had you on this show for years and years, and that certainly helps. But TV is a whole new gig, as you know, Marty, looking at the cameras, and it's a little different than doing radio. People are looking at you, so you got to make sure, you know, you're dressed well. You can't have a hot dog mustard on your pants or anything like that.
All right, very good. All right, very good. Hey, it is Father's Day. Well, and you're right, we've been doing the show for years, and we always acknowledge Father's Day and how important the day is for you, of course, with your dad and your family as well, and also for those families that don't have dads at home. We always acknowledge them. So let's get some of your thoughts on Father's Day.
Yeah, you know, two of the best days during the season is Mother's Day and Father's Day. And, you know, for me, I had a great upbringing. I have nothing but great memories, you know, of my dad, who's been gone for a while now. My mom's still here. But my dad loved baseball, and he's the one that got me started in it, and thank God he did, because here I am at this point in my life, and I'm still in the game. We used to go see the Red Sox once a year, drive up from Connecticut, and he was a Red Sox fan, and that's where the love of baseball started, just when I was a young man. And of course, Lori's dad, you know, he's gone now too, and we'll be going to see Lori's mom tomorrow and help her out with some things. So, special day in baseball, special day for everybody, just remembering their fathers if they're no longer with them. And if they are, spend the day with your dad. You're going to want to do that.
Well, did you ever think of your role as a father with all these kids now, all the players that you've mentored over the years and had to get through some tough situations? Did you ever think how much of a father you are to these guys?
Well, you know, I never looked at myself as a father figure, you know, while I was coaching, but I have to admit now that I'm getting older and up there in years, and I go back to A-ball, you know, I can get that sense a little bit more. You know, obviously as a coach, you want the best for your players, and, you know, not that you're trying to act like a father, but you want to guide them just not on the field, but in life, if they're having problems, or so you're aware of what's going on in their life. But I think the older we get, we certainly are aware of more things off the field and more things that bother them that need to be addressed. And it may not have to do with baseball.
Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good day to reflect, and I'm glad that we could do it each year together. Well, the Giants won 7-5 on Saturday, and, whoa, I said it on the show earlier today, if they have to grind out a game, that was one to grind out, about 400 pitches between the two teams, and the Giants win at 7-5. But there was a moment in the game, I thought, and as every game has that moment where it turns, where Jake McGee came in and got a very big out of Heineman, a 10-12 pitch at bat, and he finally got him with the bases loaded and a one-run game at that point. I thought he may have come in earlier to see a lefty, but let's talk about the McGee moment from Saturday.
You're right. The eighth inning was, you know, decision time for Cap and the Giants. You know, they were clinging on to a one-run lead at that point in time. And they had a couple guys on. Dom came in, you know, he gave up a home run. They ended up at first and second. So he wasn't, you know, nailing it down the way he normally does. And up comes the left-handed hitter who's got a little bit of power. And a lot of people were thinking, oh, bring in McGee. He was hot and ready. And Cap stuck with Leon. And, you know, the bottom line was that the lefty that was up there is a good fastball hitter. McGee's, you know, a good a fastball pitcher. He's really not, you know, known to throw in his breaking ball. And they tried to throw him some back foot sliders to get him to chase. Anyways, he ended up getting him out with a fly ball. So now you leave Leon in for the next hitter who's righty. So that's even the better matchup for Leon. Now, Leon, you have the right-hander. And he ended up walking him, tried to get him to chase sliders. But the bottom line is, you know, if McGee came in, he'd have to face the lefty and then face the righty. And I thought Cap did a good job of being patient and not just looking at the right-left, but looking at what the guy hits and what he doesn't hit and leaving Leon in the game, even though McGee had to come in and get a big out against a right-hander.
Boy, and the Giants end up winning it. And Vogelbach, my favorite player, it's a monstrous home run. And Ken Maka was on the pregame Saturday, and he was comparing him to Prince Fielder, who Mock managed in Milwaukee. He says, well, Fielder always had his uniform shirt bloused up, so you couldn't tell what he looked like. But this guy wears like a skin-tight shirt, so you get a good look at Vogelbach, and he's a character in baseball.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's the Chris Farley of baseball. He's got a lot of personality. I'm sure he's got some hot dog mustard on his pants a time or two. But he's a threat up there, and he ended up hitting that home run, like you said, and basically a DH at this point in his career. And, you know, the Pirates need him. You know, they got a bunch of young players, and I even think that, you know, their lack of left-handers in the pen and, you know, trying to not overuse young players, everybody wants them to come along, hurt them in this game because they just didn't have the left-handed pitchers to balance out the attack of the Giants, who were left-handed strong, and I think that ended up costing them the game.
Well, the Giants go for the sweep today behind Alex Cobb against Mitch Keller, so we'll see what happens there. Well, after today, it's off to Atlanta for four, and this is going to be quite a series. The Atlanta pitching is lined up. They had just won 14 in a row before losing a couple to the Cubs. Wrigley was jumping 40,000 there Saturday, as the Cubs ended up beating the Braves on Saturday. So get your thoughts a little bit on Wrigley and the excitement of the fans. And here's a Cub team. Look, they just lost 10 in a row, and they've got 40,000 going wild at Wrigley on a Saturday. How about that?
Yeah, that's crazy. And that's been going on for years and years. If you're a fan and you want to go to a city and a baseball game that you're going to have a good time at, that's going to Chicago and going to Wrigley Field because – as you said, the lovable losers, the fans don't care. They're having a great time at a game. It's, you know, one of the oldest ballparks left with a lot of personality, a lot of history, great place to go and watch the game because of the atmosphere. Now, you know, the facilities are poor. I mean, you think of the new ballparks for us in the clubhouse. You know, the clubhouse is not what it should be because it's an old facility. They don't have the room. Although I will say they did make some improvements 2 years ago, and it's a lot better than it was. But, Marty, you'll remember when you were traveling and went to see the Cubs and Mike Quadi that managed there, you know, just to get into the clubhouse, you got to go up like five flights of stairs. And to go to the field from the clubhouse, it's like 10 flights of stairs, and it takes you 5 minutes. So it's a very unique place. Everybody should check it out.
Now, what's your memory of Wrigley? You must have good memories there of being a coach coming in there to see Wrigley and going through that maze you just described.
Well, there's three things that come up. The first one is we played a playoff game at the end of the season in 1998, my first year. We had to play an extra game to see who was going to be, I believe it was either wild card or the division winner. And they had the ghost of Harry Carey. They had a big balloon out there, and the place was packed. That's number one. Number two, I remember having a 2-hour rain delay where it never rained, and they tarped they didn't tarp the field, and we ended up losing that game. And somehow they pulled one over our eyes, and I think we called the league, and we were upset about that ball game. And then a personal story where I remember one day Kane pitched on a Friday, and then it was a Saturday game. And I wrote out the lineup card like I do, and I go down to the dugout, which is about 5 minutes away. And here it is. I'm checking the lineup card against the wall copy so we don't have any mistakes. I look down. I got Kane as the starting pitcher again. I have the lineup right, but I don't have the starting pitcher in. I have Kane throwing again. I sprinted up those stairs, and, you know, I had nightmares that I was going to go to home plate with the wrong lineup, or I can't get there in time to hand it to the umpire. So my heart was thumping that day, and I ran up. I came down because I didn't have a pen with me. Can you believe that? I didn't have a pen, but I got a pen, and I made the change, crossed out the pitcher, and put Kane in there. So it all worked out.
I love Wrigley and the song at the end of the game. There's just something magical about it. So those are good stories of Wrigley. 40,000 there on Saturday, biggest crowd of the year as they took two from the Braves. All right, so the Giants going into Atlanta. And obviously, God, you think back to the playoffs with Atlanta with Hudson and you know, the kid at second, Brooks Conrad, and the errors, and Bobby Cox and all that. What do you think of Atlanta when you think of Atlanta? What restaurants, what's the town like for you? What comes to mind?
Well, you know, we used to play at the old ballpark, right, close to downtown. And, you know, it was never really packed. What I do remember is the Braves were in the playoffs every year, and we'd play them. It'd be a playoff game. They'd win all those divisions, and nobody would be at the ballpark. So that really comes to mind. You think of the great manager, Bobby Cox. And there were some joints. We stayed at the Ritz downtown. Wasn't a whole lot of good food in that particular area. But just recently, we moved out to Buckhead. And, you know, that's a lot nicer place to stay. They have the new ballpark. So, you know, they're typical restaurants, you know, the steak joints, you know, Morton's and Ruth Chris and the rest of them. Those are some of the places that we would go. But the new ballpark, my God, that's a beautiful place. They have a great atmosphere there as well. They're packed. The ballpark is beautiful. And, of course, it's a tough team to play, you know. So the Giants are going to have their work cut out for it. But I have fond memories of Atlanta because if you wanted to win, you were usually going to go through Atlanta or St. Louis back in the day.
Well, you still do. They're the World Series champions. So this is going to be an interesting 4 days. And you'll be on TV as well. So the fans are lucky to get your thoughts on the Giants-Braves this week. Zach Gallen, of course, he's a very good right-handed pitcher, a Marlin who went over to Arizona, had a moment this week that I thought of you. And the first eight batters that faced Zach Gallen, he hit four of them. And it's some sort of record, hitting four batters in the first eight. How about that?
That's hard to believe because this is a guy that, I've watched him pitch a number of times. And I never really noticed him lacking command. The other thing that stands out with him, I think he throws over like four times to every hitter that's up. He likes to throw to first base. He doesn't throw any of those away. So, you know, you don't see many pitchers hit four batters like that in the first inning. I don't know what was going on.
Well, it reminds me of a story. Well, you know, it's Sunday morning, so I got a story
Perfect.
For you. Remember the old right-hander Doc Ellis who played for the Pirates? And he was sort of a character and pitched a no-hitter, allegedly, on LSD. But it's 1974, and he's very upset at the Cincinnati Reds. And the Reds and Pirates had a lot of tough battles there in the early 70s to see who would win the National League pennant. So it's 1974, and he's had enough of the Reds. And he tells his teammates, Art Howe is one of them, and Art told me the story. He said, I'm going to hit them all. So Doc Ellis comes out there in the first inning. He hits Pete Rose. He hits Joe Morgan. He hits Dan Driesen. He loads the bases. Now Tony Perez comes up. He throws two right at him, and he ends up walking in a run. And now Johnny Bench comes up. He throws two right at Bench's head. He goes to the ground. And at that point, Danny Murtaugh, the old manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, a wonderful man and should be a Hall of Famer, comes out to the mound and says, Doc, I don't think it's your day today. And they take him out, and he walked out looking at the Cincinnati Reds. How about that one?
Well, that's crazy. Two things come to mind. One is, why the heck none of those Red players charged the mound? Because you just didn't let anybody get away with that. They must have been scared of Doc. I don't know if he threw the no-hitter on LSD before that or after, but it was probably before because obviously they didn't want to mess with him. And then Danny Murtaugh to do that, that's a class act way to get him out of there. He definitely didn't have it.
Yep, that was the one that reminded me of Doc Ellis when I saw Zach Gallen hit four of eight. I said, well, Doc Ellis wanted to do it, and he did do it. All right, it is Sunday morning. Woe and I always love talking a little ball here on Sunday morning. Well, a couple of things, a couple of milestones. One, Lorenzo Cain. He was DFA'd on Saturday, and the Brewers kept him around so he could get his 10 years in. And Saturday was his 10th year of Major League Baseball and now vests for a full pension. And then he was DFA'd. But I was thinking about Lorenzo Cain back to Kansas City, Milwaukee. Lorenzo Cain was a heck of a ball player, so I want to get your thoughts on Cain.
You're right. He really was. You know, even with Milwaukee at an older age, I thought he was a perfect fit there because, you know, he hit a lot of fly balls, and he has more power than you think, and Milwaukee's a great place to hit. You know, it's interesting that he hit the skids that quickly because, I mean, think just last year he was still playing very good baseball. But that's what happens when you get up in age. You just don't know what year you're going to lose it. But certainly back with the Royals, you know, we played him in the World Series. He was somebody to contend with. I mean, it was hard to strike out. He had all that speed when he got on base. So he could beat you a lot of ways. He beat you with a hit. He beat you with his speed because he was a base stealer. And he'd beat you with his glove. I mean, he covered as much ground as anybody in the game. So was a great player, in my opinion. And it's sad to see him out of the game. But who knows? You know, someone may give him a chance here before it's all said and done.
Yeah, 36 years old and still a premier fielder out there. So that is Lorenzo Cain. The other one this week is Brandon Crawford, Woe, and he's one of your guys. And talk about being a father figure and teaching somebody, and you turned him into one of the best shortstops in baseball history, as certainly the best shortstop the San Francisco Giants or even the New York Giants ever had. But he played his 1,500th game for the San Francisco Giants. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, he's special to me. Got to see him from day one in the major leagues. And, you know, if all your pupils or players were like him, you'd be in the Hall of Fame as a coach. This guy makes your job easy. But, you know, 1,500 games as a Giant, the company that he's in, McCovey, Mays, Bonds, Davenport, you couldn't handpick four better guys to have your name next to. But the glue of the infield for 11 years. And, you know, we talked about it before. We all know that he knew he was going to be able to catch the ball. The question was, how much would he hit? Well, he's had some great years at the plate, and he's still doing it. You know, Marty, he's the oldest shortstop right now that's playing every day in the big leagues at 35, and it's not easy to do. And I know some people have said, you know, well, he's not off to a great start, but, you know, I think he still has 29 RBIs, which is second on the club, and you know, a few errors here or there, they don't matter. He brings so much to that ball club. And for him to be doing it still 11 straight years, that's the mark of a great player, that longevity.
Boy, he had a couple of big hits on Saturday, a couple of big RBIs. One tied the game, and one was that the seventh run with a big double, and that was part of the winning margin, 7-5 for Saturday. Well, I want to mention River Islands before we go. It's a great time of year, and I'm thinking Father's Day, River Islands, and you have a community, and you have a place for the community to get together, and River Islands brings that, not only the beautiful homes and the places and the trails and the kayaks, but it's a community that can celebrate together. I like that.
I do, too. I mean, I think of, you know, where I live right now, and, you know, my neighbors are very important to me. And, you know, if you're in a spot where you have that sense of community, which they really do. I mean, there's so much so close by that they can all enjoy together in the facilities that you mentioned. And they have things, you know, for entertainment, too. They have the baseball field there, you know, the soccer fields. It's just a great place. And, you know, I'm glad you brought it up again because River Islands, if you haven't seen it, you know, check that place out because they have a little bit for everybody there in their housing as well. So, yeah, they're doing real well out there.
Well, it's Father's Day weekend. I know you got a big day planned today as well, and it's Giants-Pirates to see if the Giants can get out of there with a sweep and head to Atlanta. So appreciate your being on early this morning with us, and hope you have a great day, and we'll talk to you next week. It's Giants and Reds next week. Maybe I'll ask that question about Doc Ellis, see if anybody remembers it.
Yeah, give them your stories. I love them, Marty, and I think that would be good to ask somebody over there. But you have a great Father's Day as well. We didn't get into that, so I hope you have a great day today.
I hope so. I know all the kids will check in. That's their responsibility, to check in, and I'm sure that's going to happen today. All right, well, have a great time, and I appreciate it, and have a good day.
Thanks, Marty.
All right, more coming up, KNBR 680, 104.5. Bill is going to be up next, and he's got Al Oliver, Scoop. He's going to talk with Al Oliver, former Pirate and a wonderful hitter, right here, KNBR 680, the sports leader.